Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis. Kyle's here. Eric's here. And by God, we are going to finish this tournament. We're going to figure out what the worst Bears game of our lifetimes is tonight. Are you guys excited?
I've never been more excited.
You sound it.
I'm so excited.
I'm staring right at this bracket, which somehow looks like it's falling apart. I don't know how you did that so perfectly.
It's a terrible bracket. That's so good. Yeah.
Oh, and you didn't even update it for our...
No.
This is the best bracket ever.
Yeah, so we've gotten one half of the final four set. The winner, if you tuned in last week, and I don't know why you'd be here this week if you didn't tune in last week, the winner of our heartbreaking region was ultimately the 2011 Marion Barber-Tim Tebow game. The winner of the just embarrassing region was the D'Angelo Hall four interception game of 2010. And yeah, we have two regions left. We're going to get them to the final four, and then we're going to try to finish this off tonight. Do you gentlemen want to start in the unwatchable region and save the Packers for last? Cause it just seems we have been saving the Packers for last all along.
That's fine with me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So our first matchup, the 1-4 matchup, again, the seeds don't really matter that much, but we had the Thanksgiving Day Massacre of 2004. Jonathan Quinn replaces Craig Krenzel, who had previously replaced Jonathan Quinn. We've got Drew Henson and Vinny Testaverde on the other side. The only points the Bears scored was, I believe, an R.W. McCorder's pick six.
That's correct.
National TV, you're there with your uncles. Everybody's having a miserable time just watching the Bears choke the life out of football and set offensive football back 50 years.
To be clear, the Cowboys fans are also having a
Cowboys fans are also booing. Yes, Cowboys fans win this game, I think, by three scores, booed, and they weren't even wrong to do it. And then that game goes up against Henry Burris, Week 17 in 2002, the dreary, miserable end to the Bears' season in Champaign. Henry Burris, the third-string quarterback, is starting against literally one of the five best defensive teams of all time. Mm-hmm. Just an unwatchable slog of a football game. I believe the final score was 15-0. And then the next matchup we have in that region will be the 2021 game versus the Buccaneers. Justin Fields throwing three interceptions. Also, that was on Sunday Night Football, was it not?
Oh, I don't think so. That wasn't a night game, was it?
I don't think so.
That was an afternoon game, I'm pretty sure.
I feel like that game was like...
Did it feel like the lights were going out while you watched that game, and that's just... That's how it got...
Oh, no, I remembered that game was on national TV, and it was, because it was the afternoon game. So okay. It was still national TV because it was the game of the week. So it was at 4:25 p.m. instead of a nooner. So we had to be humiliated on national TV against the Buccaneers. And then also against the Buccaneers, 2016, Week 10, that was our John Fox nominee. Travis had some feelings about that one. So, you know what? Maybe we don't have to spend a lot of time discussing this. At least I don't know. I'll see how the folks feel. For me, in the first matchup, I don't know that any game is more Bears in a lot of ways than the Thanksgiving Day Massacre. That, for me, is hands down the winner.
It's the worst football game I've ever watched.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't. Let me tell you, I can't believe you put my two horses right next to each other here instead of letting Henry Burris live for one more round. But I took a lot of notes on this Henry Burris game, so I have some things to say about it before we say goodbye to good old Crazy Legs, because this game is truly fucking horrible. It was 6-0 at halftime. I just want to be clear. This is the Bears going up against the eventual Super Bowl champion Buccaneers. They are going to win the Super Bowl this year. This is Week 17, so we're going into the playoffs from here. Because of how the Bucs played in the first half, this was back when we had the three-man team. We had Theismann out here, and the other two guys hated him. And all of them were talking about the Bucs as if we needed to look forward to next year. This is a team that was literally, if they beat the Bears this night, they got a bye into the playoffs. Like, that's what they were playing for. They didn't even need to beat the Bears. They needed, like, the Eagles to lose, I think. And they were talking about, like, oh, what could the Bucs do next year? As if both of these teams were trash because of what they were witnessing on the field. At one point, Sean King is warming up on the sideline, and Theismann chimes in and says, yeah, unfortunately, Sean King is a lot less mobile than Rob Johnson, and it actually hit me like a ton of bricks that was 100% accurate. They had him warm up. They didn't put him in. I don't fucking know why. There are so many instances during this game where Henry Burris just doesn't look like a quarterback. At halftime, the Bears are again only down 6-0. They interview Dick Duron. Why? I don't know. I have no idea why they picked him. The lady asked him, Dick, your quarterback, Henry Burris, what can you do to get him going in the second half? And the pause that Dick Duron takes, it feels like it lasts a lifetime, because you can tell
that he's still pausing
in the black hole of his eyes. You can tell that what he wants to say is, it's fucking Henry Burris. What do you mean? We're going up against the best defense in the NFL. They have 5 Hall of Famers in their prime on that defense right now. What do you mean? How do I get Henry Burris going? And he, like, whatever he says, it's like half related to quarterback play. He's just like, you know, we got to go out there and, you know, Henry, he's doing fine. And it's just like, why am I in Champaign? Why is my quarterback Henry Burris? I think he's looking at the stands perplexed. Like, why is it sold out? Like, why is the stadium full right now? This doesn't make any sense. It is an absolutely abysmal game. And it's a lot like the punt game also, in that even though the Bears are within striking distance the entire game, the entire Bucs sideline is laughing the whole time and just joking around. And the Bears look like they're in hell. Because there's no chance the Bears are ever going to score. They have no shot.
Even at 6-0, like, you knew the game was already over. Like,
3 points was enough to win.
Yes.
Yeah, you knew that there was just no way the Bears were going to score. So, you know, I just want to read, for the Thanksgiving Day Massacre in 2004, just reading the stat sheet is truly incredible. The Bears ran the ball 20 times for 49 yards. So that is, let's see here. .245 yards per carry, which is funny because I believe I just did the math. So the Bears had 132 passing yards, but they lost. Let's see here. 1, 3, 2. They had 132 passing yards, but they lost 41 yards on sacks. So they had 91 total passing yards on 37 total dropbacks. So they actually also averaged 2.5 or 4.5 yards per pass or for dropback. So really just a truly impressive effort all around, regardless of which play they were running. They run or pass, they averaged 2.45 yards per attempt. The total passing line for Krenzel and Quinn combined in that game was 15 of 31 for 132 yards, 0 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, 6 sacks. They lost 41 yards. They had 140 total yards of offense. They had 4 fumbles, lost 2 of them, 4 turnovers overall, 7 penalties, 2 of 15 on third or fourth down conversions. Just a truly dismal performance against, and as should be noted, totally unwatchable, because this was not a good Dallas Cowboys team. Winning in this game brought the Cowboys to a tie of the Bears' record that year at 4-7. They finished the season 6-10. They were the 27th overall ranked scoring defense in the NFL. So this was not an elite defense by any stretch of the imagination. It wasn't even a good team. Like we noted, they were booed at halftime by their own crowd, and they deserved it, because they probably should have been beating this terrible Bears team by even more than that. Yeah, just it.
I have three notes that I took about game that I'd like to share. Most of the rest of them, I don't even remember what they were about. One of them's about a YouTube comment about how everything changed with the arrival of Devin Hester, which is a very funny thing to say. Nothing changed with the arrival of Devin Hester. But one, this game was on my birthday. It was one of the rare years where Thanksgiving and my birthday are the same day, which I used to get excited about when I was a boy. So I was supposed to be having a great day with my family, eating turkey, and we had to watch this abomination. And then, as you were talking about how the Cowboys should have been beating the Bears, there's literally a bit partway through the first quarter where the commentators are just absolutely shit-talking the Cowboys' defense. I mean, they're tearing them apart. And they force the easiest three and out I have ever seen. While these guys are just like, these guys fucking suck. They can't rush. They can't defend passes. And the Bears are like just tripping over their dicks trying to get a single yard.
Yeah, if you want to know how truly bad this game is, all you have to do is listen to Aikman and Buck talk to each other.
They're miserable. Against
this game existing.
They take a quick detour partway through the second quarter to talk about how shitty Drew Henson was as a baseball player.
Yes!
Just to reinforce how terrible he is as a quarterback. They're like, you know, he was pretty fucking bad at baseball, too.
Eric, I literally have this bold and underlined on here. Joe Buck gleefully points out that Drew is only here because he failed as a Yankees prospect. He really wants to drive this home. It's not that he's good at football. It's that he sucks at baseball.
He was so bad at baseball that he is now here.
Joe Buck is so excited to talk about how he is a shitty baseball player.
So
they are so upset that they are here on Thanksgiving.
I want to add that entering this game, Craig Krenzel threw 4 starts, 5 games. This was his passing line. 54 of 117, which if you can't do the math in your head, that's a completion percentage of 46.1%. He was averaging 134 passing yards per game. He had 3 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. A passer rating of 51.7. He had taken 21 sacks, or an average of 4.2 sacks per game, averaged out to a 17-game season as we have nowadays. That would be a 71-sack pace, so almost a David Carr, with an adjusted yards per passing attempt of 3.95 yards. He had also fumbled 8 times. So in 4.5 games entering this game, he had a grand total of 14 interceptions or fumbles. If you want to add sacks, he had a grand total of 35 sacks, fumbles, and interceptions in 4 starts.
Yes.
That's how bad this man was entering this game. He started this game 5 of 10 for 46 yards with 2 sacks, and I believe lost...
He lost 2 fumbles in the first quarter. I know this Joe Buck says at one point, he sighs deeply as he gets the ball back after his first fumble and says, just hold on to the ball, Craig. Because the announcers were not here for this game.
I had to come in here on Thanksgiving.
They are so fucking upset.
So anyways, I just gave all those Craig Krenzel numbers because I want to note that that was the passing line of the guy that was indisputably the better Bears quarterback in this match. Like, when he went down was when you gave up any hope that they could win this game. As though for
That's
some reason...
That's not true, because somehow, impossibly, in the third quarter, they had a chance to take the lead on a 48-yard field goal. They were somehow... still in it in the third quarter.
This game was 7-7 in the fourth quarter. Because the Cowboys were just as bad.
And then because they are the Chicago Bears, they fucked up their timing on the field goal and had to take a timeout, and then they missed it real bad. And then that was the end of everything.
One of my favorite running themes in this game is also Troy Aikman desperately trying to find something positive to say, and he was usually like, well, you know, Craig Krenzel isn't really this bad. He just doesn't have anybody open. And then immediately the truck will cut to all the routes of the wide receivers like they do, and it will show that every single wide receiver was, in fact, wide open. It was the only time I've ever seen David Terrell throwing a fit on the sideline, and I thought, yeah, he's right. David Terrell was wide open on that play. And it's almost, it gets comical by the end of the second quarter. He does it again, and then the truck is just like, yeah, we're going to go right to it. Let's show all the open Bears receivers on this play. And then, of course, Jonathan Quinn is in there, and it becomes a true disaster in the second half.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think, is there any way that we would advance? I know, Travis, it was your game.
No.
You were there.
I don't think no. Even Travis would.
I love that terrible Henry Burris game, but it's got nothing on Thanksgiving, man.
Okay. So here's the thing. The next bracket. So we have dueling Bucks games. Do we want to waste a lot of airtime on this? Because I got to be honest, I can't imagine putting either of these over the Thanksgiving Day matchup either. Can't get
no,
either of you.
No,
to me, Henry Burris was the
one of them to win.
Okay,
but...
If I had to pick one of them, I would probably pick the 2021 Bucks because again, that was the first real clunker that Justin had after the opening start against Cleveland. And like Travis pointed out last week, when he didn't have the excuse of it being his first career start. And that was the first time that you really got like the vibes where you're like, maybe this kid can't really read a defense a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this is the Justin Fields game that hangs.
Yes.
This is because like the 2016 one, I mean, I got to tell you, I was shocked when I went to look up this game when we started setting the bracket to learn that Jay Cutler was somehow still the quarterback of the Chicago Bears for this game. Like, who fucking cares, man? This is over. It's been over for a long time.
I mean, it was the worst year of Bears football just from a watchability standpoint.
Yeah, it was very bad. But, like, did anyone have anything riding on Jay Cutler turning it around in...
2-6, yeah, no,
week
I think
10
no.
of 2016, like this was, yeah. This was a punctuation mark.
Okay, so yes, I would advance the 2021 Bucks game over the 2016 Bucks game, but both of them, neither of them holds a candle to the Thanksgiving Day Massacre. I think the unwatchable region, we created it specifically with this game in mind.
Yeah.
So the Thanksgiving Day Massacre walks into the Final Four for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I think what I noticed, I guess, as a send off for the 2021 Justin Fields versus Tom Brady's Bucks game, is that everybody who wrote in had a different game where they gave up on Justin Fields completely. And I just think this is the one, you know, for me at least, and I think maybe for you too, where it was like, oh shit, I think Justin's just bad.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say that this is the game that I messaged our group chat, like, not even halfway through it. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll see you guys, you know, next year on the next quarterback
Eric
or whatever.
Quite literally gave up on the
Bears.
Yeah,
I turned
point.
The TV off and yeah, I didn't watch another Bears game the rest of the year.
Like I said, this one did not have, I mean, it definitely caused some concern for me. But then he actually had his best stretch, really, that he ever had as a passer. After that Bucks game, he had a stretch there where he actually not only reached 200 yards per game passing, he averaged it, which he never got back to.
Yeah,
in the other 2 years. So for me, it does not stick out as the one of the Justin Fields heartbreakers in my mind. But yeah, it's sure that one advances for me. Just
you were very Justin Fields pilled though. Like you were ready to go down with the ship for a long
yeah,
time.
And I mean, it's not like I gave up on Justin completely, but this is more, I guess, the first time where I thought, oh no, like he could be bad. Like it's, before yeah. that, I thought there's no way I love this guy as a prospect. And after that game, I was like, he's got some flaws, like real flaws.
See, for me,
you know what? I believe this game might have been when because I had tweeted in 2020 something about how Justin Fields might be the best quarterback in the world, and we'd never know because he plays for the Chicago Bears. And I went to tweet it again, and I was like, wait a minute, I think I already did this. And I went back and I believe this game, I just retweeted my own tweet from the previous year.
Yeah, and also for me, I think that game the game where I was like, oh shit, maybe he really does just suck. That actually for me was week two the next year of his second year against the Packers, when he only got off like 11 pass attempts. Just because on like literally half of his dropbacks, he just refused to make a throw. In that game at Lambeau. And that was when I was first. And then there was the Texans game the week after that, that was like truly just, he was like 8 of 17. It was just fucking abysmal. That was when the doubt really creeped in for me. So this game was a little too early for that, but it was the first game where I was like, and it wasn't just bad offensive line play or anything like that. And granted, the Bucs were a good team, but like, if you go back and watch the interceptions he threw in that Bucs game, none of them were the ones that you could easily explain away. They were just really like, oh, you've got no idea what you're looking at right now. Interceptions. So, but yeah, no, the Thanksgiving game, it's in the Final Four. The Bucs haunt this, even though surprisingly the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who normally are a team that I just don't think that much about.
The Bucs figure surprisingly strongly in Chicago Bears lore.
They managed to get themselves onto the bracket twice. Good for them. But yes, that's the end of the Buccaneers, the bracket. So the time has come to debate which of our Packers game gets to be the representative. And you know what? I honest to God, there's an argument. I think there's a favorite here, and it's probably the one that in my gut I'm voting for right now, but there is an argument, I think, for every single one of these.
I think there's an argument for three of them.
Okay. I'm interested to find out which one you think there's not an argument for. So here, our first matchup. Obviously the number one overall seed in this region, the 2011 NFC Championship game, Bears versus Packers for the Super Bowl, Jay Cutler's knee injury, Todd Collins, Caleb Haney throwing an interception to a defensive tackle. It's all there. Versus the four seed, week two, 2012 at Lambeau. Jay's got all of his new toys. It doesn't fucking matter. The Charles Woodson, we just need to be where we need to be, and we know Jay's going to throw us the ball game. Same old Jay game. And then the next matchup, the two seed, 4th and 8, 2013, the Chris Conte game versus Jay's Cutler's debut at Lambeau Field in 2009, 4 interceptions. So two very strong matchups, a lot of very strong contenders. Let's start at the top, boys. Does the NFC Championship game, can it be beaten in this matchup by same old Jay?
Eric, do you want to go first? You want me to go?
Both of these games are ones I think there's an argument for. So the NFC Championship game, I mean, how much do you even need to say about it? It was the NFC Championship game, heartbreaker to lose. It was against the Packers. So fucking tired of losing to the Packers. It started, or at least really dug the hooks in of the whole, oh, Jay Cutler, you know, he's Jay Quitler. He's not tough. He's not a competitor because he didn't look sufficiently injured after being told he wasn't allowed to play. Like, it's got it all in addition to being a heartbreaking playoff.
Well, and I think also key to that is an example of the Bears just being not a modern NFL franchise in terms of having any understanding of how public relations works and not protecting their guy, just listing him as questionable instead of saying that he's out with a
massive
injury.
Right, there was no reason not to say his knee is broken. It doesn't work.
Waiting a whole day to comment on it and then saying that he has, you know, he's got a sprain, which granted, a sprain is the medically accurate term, but like he tore his MCL.
Yeah,
like think of how it's going to play. Just say, yeah, Jay tore his MCL. He could not play.
Yeah, so yeah. This game, it had everything. It's a juggernaut.
I flipped a chair. There was...
So this is where I'm sad about my lost recording, because the speech that I gave in defense of the second Jay Cutler game, making it on here, like, we spilled blood and sweat and tears saying, oh, it's not Jay's fault. He's so fucking shitty. He needs all these things. He's got to get receivers. They gave it all to him. And he came out against the Packers, and it's the exact same fucking game, man. Like, it's indistinguishable
from
his debut.
The thing about this game, and the thing, reason it's so emblematic, and the reason that Jay Cutler is really so emblematic of the Bears of our lifetime, is just the way Charles Woodson said, same old Jay. Because is there any player that you could, that he had constant turmoil around him and you could change everything around him, and yet fundamentally the result was always the same old Jay, same old Bears. It was just the most brutal, nothing ever changes. You are destined to watch the same fucking Bears Packers game every time for the rest of your goddamn life. There's a lot of power to, I mean, it's a strong four seed here. This is not a slam dunk. There is really a lot psychologically.
You know, I am about surprised same that it's old a Jay. Four seed, because to me, this is worse than him coming in. It was his debut, you know, his first game with the team. We knew our wide receivers were Devin Hester and company. Like, it was not fun to watch. I didn't like it. But it was easier to rationalize than when he, like, we gave him all the toys. We gave him what we did what we were supposed to do. And he just, it didn't matter. It didn't make us the slightest bit of difference.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly with Eric on this one. I think this is much worse than Jay's debut, even though they're basically the same game, but pretty much because.
Yeah, it's worse because it's the same game.
Because we're simply witnessing, you know, this thing again. The other thing, the other reason I think it has a shot in this matchup is I've been Kyle-pilled. I keep thinking about what Kyle said when we started this tournament. Which of these games, if you have to break a tie, is the most Bears, right? And in the end, the NFC Championship game just isn't a very Bears loss. It's a close game against the Packers, which, like, doesn't usually fucking happen. It's the NFC Championship game, of which we have seen two in our lifetimes. And the first one was just an absolute stomp of the Saints. It's not even a Bears loss in that we usually don't get a bailout. Like, oh, our starting quarterback got hurt. It's usually like, your starting quarterback sucks, like this other game.
Yeah,
right?
He didn't have a Jay meltdown. He didn't throw five picks. He injured his knee. And
yeah,
and
it
sucks.
And it was,
hurts,
and this,
that happens.
Like, if
every
I'm being
team
honest,
can relate.
Like, this any team, the 2010 team, was probably the best Bears team of our lifetimes. The most balanced team, at least. Even the Super Bowl team, it wasn't very good overall. It was really good on one side of the ball.
Right.
Kind of sucked asshole on the other side. The 2010 team was, like, solidly built. It felt like a Super Bowl contender. It felt like we could
I still think that if they had gotten past the Packers, they could have beaten the Steelers. I do.
Oh, for sure.
Now, do I think there's any universe where they get past the Packers? No, because we're not destined for that. But I think they could have, that if they'd gotten past the Packers, they probably could have beaten the Steelers. I do still believe that. But yeah, I mean, this is why I'm glad Travis brought it up, because I am always correct. there's a reason there is just a heartbreaking region, and heartbreaking is part of the rubric, but the tournament here is not most heartbreaking Bears games of our lives. Because if that was the case, yeah, you walk in the 2011 NFC Championship game, you walk in the Super Bowl, if you will. Those were heartbreaking games.
I mean, we put the Super Bowl in heartbreaking and it didn't make the bracket.
Right.
Yeah.
So these are the worst Bears games of our lives. And what does something mean to be a Bears game and to be a bad Bears game? And I think, yeah, there's really something to that. 2012, just same old Jay, man. Like, that's the thing. You had Brandon Marshall. You had Alshon Jeffery. You just came off a dominant win against the Colts. You put up 35 points, which is not something that you, 42 points, actually, I think it was. Which is
also
not something that
coming off a season, you made it to the championship game. And only, you know, arguably didn't go
two years later.
Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah, the Jay broken thumb was the year before. Yeah.
See, Marion Barber was the next season.
Yeah.
So,
this is...
Boy, I don't know.
And I agree with what Travis said, and I wrote this down. I think I even might have said it in one of the bracket-setting episodes. Like, it is not a Bears thing to do. Any fan of any team can relate to
losing.
A deep playoff push was lost due to our starting quarterback getting injured. That is a thing that happens, and it sucks. but
it only it really only sticks out to deal with it. Because it's the Green Bay, right? If you took away Green Bay from this, we might not even remember this game.
That's a good, like, oh, it sucked that that happened.
Well, I mean, we'd remember it certainly, but yeah, I'm if the team that they were playing, and hell, if the team that they had been playing in this game was the Vikings, not even the Packers, just the Vikings, do we feel the same way about it? Is it one of the worst Bears games of our lives? I don't.
Right. I feel like we're all leading the same direction.
I think we are.
Yeah,
I think this
can't
is going to be.
It, but
I think this is going to be controversial. I think some folks might yell at us. We might get an email or two. But yeah, I guess I think I'm going to advance. Same old Jay.
I'm a coin toss at this point. So if you guys are both same old Jay, I'm fine with that.
I agree. I mean, the pit in my stomach is worse for just remembering, like, God, I think we've got it all figured out. There are no more excuses. We turn the corner, and then the Packers not only swatted that idea away, like you said, Charles Woodson came out and was like, literally nothing has changed. It will always be the same as long as Jay Cutler is your quarterback. Sorry. And he was right.
He was right. He was right. It was always the same.
That's it.
Except for one one time in the next matchup that we will talk about.
Yeah.
I have a lot to say about this game. I'll let you guys go first.
Okay, hold on. So, hold on. I just want to pull up the 2012 stats again real quick. So, Jay was 11 of 27, 126 yards, 4 interceptions, 7 sacks. Net passing yards, 74. Less than the Bears actually managed in the Thanksgiving Day Massacre. 4 turnovers, 8 penalties. My God. Yeah, I think it's got to be that. It's got to be that. I think I'm going to do it. It's same old Jay. All right. Okay, are we moving on to the next one already?
Unexpected farewell to the 2011 NFC Championship.
I'm surprised, but in the end it's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. So we didn't even mention the J-Webb shove and all of the bullshit that happened as a result of that. Like, that was
That's
that
true.
Game too.
Oh God, it was.
Yeah, that was the game because Jamarcus Webb had like 3 false starts in a row or something, and Jay shoved him in the back on the way off the stands, and that caused controversy. And Olin Krutz, of course, was tweeting like, oh, Jay would have to see, I'd be decking him on the sidelines, blah, 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 blah. So
as we know, you would do that for any reason.
All right, so our next matchup, we've got 4th and 8, Chris Conte versus Jay's debut week 1. And I think we've kind of already articulated, for me anyways, why the winner in this matchup is not Jay's debut in week 1. Even though, I mean, my personal story with this game, like I said, I had swine flu. I was sweating profusely while also shivering. And I had spent so much time that summer looking forward to this game, specifically thinking the Bears were going into. And it's another one. It's a close game. They lose on a last second touchdown, basically. Kind of like the D'Angelo Hall game, in that I remember rewatching this game and being like, none of those Jay interceptions, except for the very last one where Johnny Knox fell down on a slant, which God knows that happened a lot. But like the first 3 interceptions, none of those really needed to happen. On all 3 of them, it was just Jay pressing for no fucking reason when the situation did not demand it at all. So, I mean, it was a crippling game. But I think we articulated why same old Jay is that same game, but even more devastating, which is why I think in this matchup, 4th and 8
kind of has the
advantage.
4th and 8 is my one seed here. I think 4th and 8 is far worse than the NFC Championship game.
All right, make your case. Why is it
go
worse?
For it?
Well, I would prefer to save my arguments for if we're thinking this is a shoo-in, I'll save it for the next matchup.
Okay.
Well, we've already decided that 4th and 8 is advancing, I think, at this point.
All right, so.
Okay.
Although I do think, Kyle, you left one thing out. The reason that debut for Jay hit so hard for you, which I don't think you've discussed on any of the previous episodes here, is you were on the Jay wagon since he was at Vanderbilt. You were
an early Jay
Cutler supporter.
I
remember we were in the dining hall when the trade was officially announced, which we never did. I think we ate in the dining hall like 3 times. And I don't know that I've ever seen. I was at your wedding. I was there when both of your sons were. I mean, not, you know, just born, but newborns. I don't know if I've ever seen you as animated as you were to tell me all about Jay Cutler.
I was very excited.
You got exactly what you wanted. Your guy in his prime.
Yeah. It's true. Yes, I could not have imagined. I mean, Jay Cutler. Yes, I watched Jay Cutler when he was at Vanderbilt. And I always have a soft spot for that guy. It's so funny because in a lot of ways, the sequence that led to me being absolutely convinced that Josh Allen could not be a successful NFL quarterback kind of began with my crush on Jay Cutler, because I always fell for that guy with the rocket arm who just carried a bad college team and got the shit kicked out of him. I always had sympathy for those guys because I was like, those are the guys most prepared for life in the NFL. They've already seen it. They've already been through the shit. They know what they're dealing with. And Jay got off to a good start with the Broncos. I couldn't believe the Bears' good fortune. So yeah, I mean, it hurt me personally on so many levels that debut. And I spent the whole summer telling my dad about him and talking about, my dad was like, yeah, I've heard it before. We don't have I'll believe we have a quarterback when I see it. And I was like, no, Dad, this guy's different. And then just as pick after pick after, I mean, you guys know my father, you can imagine what he was saying as pick after pick rolled in. So like, yeah, that one, it was brutal for me. So it's not without some hesitation that I advance 4th and 8 over that, but I'm willing, because we laid out the argument for same old Jay so well, I think I will advance 4th and 8 over it.
Yeah. So Eric, you're officially arguing against week 2, 2012.
4th and 8 versus same old Jay. Eric, you have the floor.
So 4th and 8 is near and dear to my heart. I think it was the episode that my audio got lost. I watched this game alone in a Buffalo Wild Wings in Jacksonville, Florida. And
I should honestly see if Buffalo Wild Wings will sponsor the Scottcast.
We have mentioned a lot.
We are Buffalo all, Wild all of Wings our saddest so memories.
And I remember being, you know, like 2013 was probably like the high mark of my Bears fandom. Like it was just all going right. Like they were the second best offense in the NFL that year. How often does a Chicago Bears fan get to say we have a good offense, let alone a great one? The only people who were doing it better were, well, that was the year that Peyton Manning broke like every record, correct? Thank you both for your
that
support.
That was the year that Peyton Manning broke
welcome.
The record.
No, so they were
averaging goddamn near 30 points a game. And the entire defense got injured, and so they were just fighting for their fucking lives when they should have been basically a guaranteed playoff seat. And they come into this game against the Packers, and it's a winnable game. It's a game they should have won. And then with like 48 seconds on the clock, it's a 4th and 8. You don't even have to stop the touchdown here. Like, just eat some time. You will win. And Chris Conte, who we've watched all, like we've watched this over and over again and heard about, oh, he's fine. You're wrong about Chris Conte. It's, you know, if you get into the numbers, he's actually okay. And he misses his guy. And it's the most open touchdown you'll ever see. It looks like a Madden play. And there's a frame. The camera cuts to Jay Cutler for like 1 second. And he's gone. He's not there. He's like, I've put up with this shit for so long. I finally did everything right. And he understands in that moment. He is cursed. Something about him, something about the Bears, it doesn't work. The universe will not allow him to succeed on this team. And it breaks my heart. Like, he doesn't even know what facial expression to put on. And, you know, people like to be like, oh, Jay doesn't care about anything. He's all apathetic. Like, you could tell when he was having a good time. You could tell when he was mad. And he doesn't exist anymore. He's like gray and his eyes are all puffy. And like, this must have happened in between the time the ball left Aaron Rodgers' hand and the time it hit Randall Cobb's hands. It's insane. And like, I don't think there's anything more Bears than fucking up in that specific way when the stakes are that high to that team. Like it is what we are as a football team. So if a Jay Cutler game is going on here for me, boy, he really went through it with that one.
This is sort of a question of at what point were you most heartbroken by this Bears team as constructed not working? Was it early? Was it, you know, week two of 2012? Or was it the end of this team as constructed, the very last game of 2013? Like, when were you most heartbroken? You know, like,
when... Oh, I mean, yeah, I think the answer is clear in my case. Because here we had finally gotten what we thought we were going to get. The reason that 2012 game hurt so bad is because we thought we did everything right and it still didn't work. And then 1 year later, it was working. That offense was great.
Yes, but I mean, that was the worst Bears defense of our lives.
Yeah, right.
And
that's the problem.
If they had won this game, it would have gotten them to what, 9-7? Yep. I didn't have a lot of hope for them in the playoffs. You wanted them to win this game because you wanted to make the playoffs at Green Bay's expense, but I didn't. I think for me, same old Jay hurt worse because, again, it was the moment when... I mean, I didn't give up all hope for Jay. I had hope, I guess, that Trestman would turn him around. And he actually kind of did for a little bit. But
that's
like,
what I'm saying. Like,
it was
worked.
The moment... But it was the moment that, like, you knew the Lovie Smith era. You knew that window with Urlacher, with Peppers, with Briggs, with Tillman. You knew that week two against Green Bay, you kind of knew that was that. Because if they couldn't get over the Green Bay hump, they weren't likely to win the division. If they're not going to win the division, they're not likely to make it to the Super Bowl. And you felt, you knew 2012, if it didn't go far enough, was Lovie's last go. You really felt that the window was going to close there. And again, I don't know if we're relying on this too much. But if you ask me which of those two games was a more Bears way to lose, was a more Bears representative of the Bears that I've watched, it's honestly same old Jay. Because again, the whole thing is same old Bears. Your offense is hopelessly outclassed, despite all you've done and all of your excitement. Your offense is hopelessly outclassed by the team up north just having a Hall of Fame quarterback. You, for all that you thought you changed things, you really didn't change that much. The offensive line was still terrible. You still didn't take offensive coordinator seriously. And my close personal best friend, Nate Tice's father, was offensive coordinator, and the playbook was a little anemic, we'll say. And again, another byproduct of not taking offensive coordinator very seriously, not really trying to go out and get the best people at that job. To me, the more Bears loss, the uglier loss, the more depressing loss in a long-term sense was same old Jay. So I think controversially, I don't know where you two are. I have to stick with same old Jay here, believe it or not, which is surprising because I'm the one that literally just put it as a four seed, but I've talked myself into it.
Let me put a little spin on your thing about long-term consequences. Like, who didn't know when we didn't win this game, they will not try to build an offense for at least 10 years.
You're saying the Bears gave up on offense after 4th and 8.
They did. They hired, instead of hiring Bruce Arians, they hired this fucking Canadian weirdo who did make a good offense somehow for 1 year, and it didn't work. And they were like, okay, well, offense clearly is bad. We gotta respectfully and diligently run the ball and play defense. That's how we win, even though it's never fucking worked before. And they went right back to it.
Like, God, I'm the tiebreaker here, right?
We get one shot at having an offense about every 15 years.
You know, it's unfortunate for Eric, because frankly, the truth is, like, 4th and 8 just never left a mark on me. You know, I watched that game, but I was already like, you know, our defense sucks. Jay is, I feel like in my heart, it felt like Jay was only playing well because he had the excuse of a bad defense. And it just, yeah, it just didn't feel like the Bears were a very good team that year. Now, it did suck. That play was bad. But there's also the problem that that game was very good. Like 33-28, back and forth game, lots of offense. Like Jay was playing really well. Just Matt Forte was running the ball really well. It was a really fun game to watch, which came down to, as I recall, as I was watching it and the ball was halfway through the air, I simply walked out of the room. I was like, yeah, all right, we're moving on. But I feel like part of this is because it was just too late. It was too late in this series of events for me. 2010 had already happened. 2011 had already happened with, you know, Marion Barber and all the losses with Caleb Haney. 2012 had already happened. Like, I had to deal already with this game, week two of 2012, telling me that, like, yeah, I'm sorry, like, Jay Cutler is always going to be Jay Cutler. It doesn't matter who you give him. So I feel like by the time I got to the end of 2013, I was just like, yeah, this is how it's going to happen. This is who the Bears are.
Yeah, I mean, we got to give credit to Travis here. He was the most adamantly against hiring Mark Trestman of the three of us. He called it. And Travis, I still remember Travis was done with Jay Cutler after 2012. And I distinctly remember him saying, the only thing that convinced me to give Jay Cutler one more year is if Joe Flacco wins the Super Bowl.
That was very upsetting when he actually did the Super Bowl. Literally the worst thing that could have happened to me. I was like, so, well, now I'm contractually obligated. But yeah, I can't believe this has happened. But I, too, am going to advance same old Jay, week two of 2012.
This is insane. I'm so happy that we are doing this specifically to Eric.
This is great. I'm really
happy. Eric is going to go flip a couch right
this is
now.
So mad. Yeah, he's as mad now, I think, as you were back in the original tournament that we did in the first Godcast when we eliminated Rex Grossman that time.
I wish that was still up there. You two were like, yeah, it's got to be Cade McNown. And I was like, I'm going to kill you. And I'm going to blow up a building. I can't believe it.
I do want to say, though, before we go into the Final Four, I feel like we got to establish how much something being shitty means it's like the Bears and therefore wins. Because I don't know how much we want to lean on that through the end here.
I think for me, it's less... that was a factor, but for me, I think the same old Jay thing is just what hits the hardest there. That was so illustrative of so many things, and it was that feeling.
Right, but it wasn't like the Bears at all is an argument that was used against both of the games that you yourself listed as 1 and 2 seeds on this bracket.
That's true. That's true.
Yes, you're not wrong. But here's the deal. Here's the deal.
We've got four games left in any of the games that are remaining, so I guess it's a moot point.
We have four games left here, and there's only one game here that I think perfectly represents the Chicago Bears of my lifetime.
Okay.
And I don't know if we just want to have a hoedown between all four of these games, but there's only one of these where I think it ticks every box.
Okay, our final four, we have Marion Barber versus D'Angelo Hall. And then we have same old Jay versus the Thanksgiving Day Massacre. Travis, I'm very curious which of these four games you consider to be the only one worthy of the crown.
Okay, the Bears in my lifetime are defined by being, I would say, kind of like the Chargers or Jaguars are going to be this year, right? It's a team where you don't mark them automatically as a win or a loss, but you also sort of ignore them on the schedule. You're like, oh, we're playing them? Yeah, I mean, that's a game. That's fine. Right, exactly. That's fine. That's who the Bears are, right? So this game can't come from like a place like the NFC Championship game, right? It has to be something that shows you that the Bears are like, they're always beatable, but they could also always win a game, right? But it also has to have a colossal failure by your quarterback. And it also has to have something embarrassing happen in the press that gets us laughed at for like a good couple weeks to a month. And I just feel like the D'Angelo Hall game is the perfect fucking Bad Bears game, man. Like, it hits every single box. This was a very good Bears team, which refused to fucking win against an awful Washington team, just randomly, in the middle of the season. And the reason they did it is because their quarterback shit the bed completely. And then when he got out there and talked to the press, he had to drop a soundbite that embarrassed the Bears for months, if not years. If not years, I mean, I'm still thinking about Jay being like, yeah, I would throw another interception to D'Angelo Hall right now if you gave me any chance. If he's in this fucking room, you bring him in here, I will throw the fucking ball to him because that's how I play.
Jay would have thrown infinity interceptions to D'Angelo Hall.
It had bad play calling. The Bears are built on bad play calling on offense, right? Like, we could do a whole tournament on, like, bad, worst called Bears games, and we would have 50 fucking nominees for this. It's constant. We have bad play callers at offensive coordinator, and then we replace them with worse play callers. And in this game, all we needed to do was hand the fucking ball off to Matt Forte, which is the only thing the Bears have ever done in my life. And instead, we kept throwing the ball. When our quarterback, who cannot stop throwing interceptions sometimes, is throwing interceptions and is out there saying, you know what? I'm going right back at him, man. I'm going right back at him. I'm going right back at the worst corner on this team. I can't stop myself. You can't stop me. And all I can see is the goofy meme. I'll fucking do it again. It's so perfect. Okay. It's so perfect for me.
Okay. Eric, do you...
Well, I mean, I think D'Angelo Hall beats the brakes off Marion Barber. Really even think we need to talk about that one.
Really? Okay. All right. Okay.
I think we've said enough about the Marion Barber game and all the bad things that happened during it and all the bad things that happened because of it. But as Travis says, like, D'Angelo Hall is emblematic of the Bears. But I think the same argument also can be very strongly made for same old Jay.
Yeah, I think
the Bears in my lifetime are largely synonymous with the Jay Cutler.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the same way we've almost penalized playoff games, I almost think any game that featured Jay Cutler being Jay Cutler gets a bonus. Because, like, what is more Bears than the Jay Cutler tenure? Where, like, you never could quite check all of the way out. And at the same time, you never could quite buy all the way in. He was good sometimes. He was really, really bad when he was bad. But, like, you know, there's something there, right? Isn't there? You know? And then
the problem with Jay is largely that, like, what came before Jay? You know, what did we have to look back on and not immediately say, oh, thank God, at least we have Jay Cutler instead of that?
Yeah.
You know, you can't look back and pine for the days when you had a good quarterback when you've never fucking had one.
Yeah. Okay. Before we eliminate the Thanksgiving Day Massacre, which I sort of agree with, I want to throw a couple more anecdotes out there because this game is fucking hilarious. Folks, if you haven't watched this game, if somehow you missed it or if you've forgotten it, you really need to go watch it. It is probably the worst NFL game in history. I have so many anecdotes.
I feel like if we had a game that we're calling the worst game in NFL history, it probably should maybe not
to watch as far as watchability. But you know what? I'm not against moving it on. Guys, when Drew Henson came into the game, the crowd chants, Drew, Drew. By 10 minutes into the first quarter, Drew throws a pass, which is so badly underthrown that the entire crowd at Cowboys Stadium gasps. If you have never heard an entire stadium gasp and then immediately go into a hushed murmur, like 50,000 people gasp and then go, oh, geez, oh my God, did you see that? Like, this is the game, folks. Go seek it out. Watch Drew Henson throw a pass. He went from Drew to holy shit, he's terrible. And it took 10 minutes.
You had a chance to make that really. He went from Drew to Boo.
Yeah, I can't believe you didn't say that. It was right there.
That's hack shit.
I mean, there were people in the audience created signs. They're in the stadium begging Troy Aikman to come play quarterback.
I also want to be clear that they were cheering Drew And then they were kind of mute in the second quarter as they were like, oh my God, this guy's bad too. But when they put Vinny Testaverde back in with a bad shoulder for Drew Henson, they booed the shit out of Vinny Testaverde. The Cowboys fans were just waiting for him to come into the game. They every time he touched the ball, even as the Cowboys went up 21-7, they are booing Vinny Testaverde. I do not know what Vinny had done to deserve this, especially compared to what Drew Henson was putting up in that first half. But it was fucking funny. I also want to point out that at one point in this game, Vinny is sacked hard by the Michael Haynes. And it made me laugh out loud. Like this was the absolute perfect game to see Michael Haynes get a sack.
Okay.
But yeah, I also agree. I think just same old Jay would advance here just because it's a more Bears game. We're not usually as bad as we were on Thanksgiving, right? Okay.
So
I think it's a J versus J.
It was always going to be this way.
It always has been.
So which four interception Jay Cutler game was more.
All right. I am still mad about 4th and 8, but this is a very funny way for this to end.
Which Jay Cutler 4th? Well, it's funny because in our last episode or two episodes, the thing about Jay Cutler is when you mention his 4-interception game, you have to be like, okay, which one?
Even if you qualify it with his 4-interception one that generated an iconic soundbite, somehow you still have to say which one.
His 4-interception game against the Packers, which one? Okay, so which...
I can't fucking believe this is happening.
Which is the worst Bears game of our lives? Is it same old Jay, or is it I'll fucking do it again to D'Angelo Hall?
I think it's D'Angelo Hall.
You think it's D'Angelo Hall? All right.
Oh Jesus!
All right, let me think about this.
To me, it's same old Jay. And it's because of many of the same reasons that you listed, Travis. Honestly, like it is Jay Cutler being an embarrassing mess. It involves a person having a snappy thing in the press. Granted, it wasn't a Bears, you know, coach or player that said it, but like still, ouch. And like it was the time that we spent even into the D'Angelo Hall season being like, oh, you know, if he just had better receivers, oh, if he just had pass protection, oh, he just needs this, he just needs that. They gave him what he needed, and he fucking did it again. You know, like it extends beyond D'Angelo Hall and achieves its prime form when you put him against, which I maybe this is just my sort of bias for the area or for the era in which I was most invested, but I felt like Jay had, like, there was a filter that activated when he played against the Packers where he just became worse. And like Jay always, he famously had very bad ball luck. If a pass gets tipped by a normal quarterback, it has like a 10% chance of going somewhere it is catchable. If you tip a Jay Cutler pass, that chance rockets to like 80%. Against the Packers, it will go directly into a cornerback's hand 100% of the time. It just he had a field around him that became worse when he played against the Green Bay Packers, and we got all excited and we got our hopes up, and he went out there and showed us that no, in fact, he was never going to beat them. He was never even going to look okay against them. It was just going to be that same old Jay forever.
These are very similar games, really, like down to the stat line, but also just the D'Angelo Hall game shows one side of the most common Bears side I've seen, right? Which is just the Bears could beat or lose to anybody at any time. It's just kind of random, right? It's you could be playing a bad team and the Bears could be very good and they could lose, or they could be very bad and they could beat the eventual Super Bowl champions. They've done it multiple times. And then the other side of that horrible coin is the Bears are looking good going into a Packers game, and then they're going to pull our pants down and give us a soundbite in the media that's like, yeah, they're just the fucking Bears. And we're just going to have to take it. I just think, since we're comparing Jay games, the one where Jay came out afterwards and just took the fucking mask off and said, this is who I am forever. I'm Jay. Like, it was always me versus this other game where he was just like, oh no, like, you know, I'm going to quietly fade off into oblivion while Charles Woodson does the damage. There's just something about that one moment in time where Jay Cutler was like, yeah, it was me all along, and I'm never going to stop. And somehow, improbably, you have like half a decade more of this shit to deal with. I'll be here in 2016. Yeah,
I still cannot believe that Jay Cutler played for the Bears in 2016. That is insane to me.
Kyle, you know what? This is your guy. This should have come down to you.
It comes down to me. I have to choose between which Jay Cutler game hurt me personally. In many ways, I have to choose between my two best friends. Mm-hmm. Obviously, whoever I go with here is the one that I like more. You should read really far into that. let it rend our triumvirate and twain forever. God,
the other friend will be executed.
This is tough. So, same old Jay pulls me a little bit in the sense that if I try to zoom out and look at the bigger picture, it was in a season where the Bears narrowly missed the playoffs, and it represented the slamming of that window realistically. And the slamming of what was still the only, if you really think about it, and it wasn't even a good particular run of contention, but from 2005 to 2012, the Bears basically competed for the playoffs more or less every year, which is the only stretch in my life where they've done that. And since then, they really have not done that. And so the same old Jay and the closing of that window in some ways really tempts me there. On the other hand, like, just the pure fucking embarrassment of the D'Angelo Hall game, of Jay just, like Travis said, showing no contrition whatsoever. Bonus points for this is an NFL record, I think. Like, it's the only time one guy has picked off another guy four times in the same game. I believe they sent the ball to the Hall of Fame.
They didn't.
I think they did it. D'Angelo Hall, ball, Hall of Fame.
They just have a gif of Jay Cutler in the goofy hat right above the ball. You think?
November 3rd, 2010, Hall intercepts Hall. The Pro Football Hall of Fame's curator, Jason Akins, slipped into the blah, blah, blah. Hall picked off four passes, all in the second half. Oh, God, they were literally all in the second half, too. Wow. In his team's 17-14 win over the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field on October 24th, 2010, he became just the 19th player in NFL history, the first since 2001 to have four interceptions in a single game. This is the okay. So the ball is not in the Hall, but his jersey from that game is.
That's actually worse. It's worse that we put a D'Angelo Hall jersey in the.
Yes, D'Angelo Hall gets to say that he is in some fashion in the Hall of Fame because of Jay Cutler in this game. So I'm also going to get personal here. This game, happened while I was attempting to fly home from Seattle by myself after my brother's wedding. I had got an awful freaking migraine. I nearly missed my layover in Minneapolis. And somehow I was actually able to watch this game a little bit on the flight. I really can't remember how I did this because it was before I had a smartphone, but like, and I just remember like being like, well, it's not too bad. It's not too bad. They can do this. They can do this. Like, it's the game's still in reach. The game's still in reach. That they're not even trailing. They're not even trailing. They're not even trailing. They didn't even trail until so late in the game. And this awful migraine, and I'm in the airport in Minneapolis, and I'm just watching with mouth agape as Jay finishes it off in the most embarrassing fashion. And I just remember, through this splitting headache, trying to wait for my next flight, and just muttering to myself, D'Angelo fucking Hall. And it was one of the most miserable, just like, Bears game watching experiences of my life, too. So, but 2012, man, it closed the window. And that was one where that game, I remember my wife insisted that I go see it at a party. People wanted to have a party to watch the Bears against the Packers on Thursday night football. And I was like, you want me to go watch the Bears play the Packers on national TV surrounded by people that you want to be friends with and that you don't want to see your husband at his worst? I distinctly remember a Vikings fan who was also watching this game with us and kept saying, well, Christian Ponder wouldn't do that. And I nearly choked the life out of him. I considered it. Fuck, this is, the weight of this is immense.
It was amazing. He spent 5.5 minutes so far kvetching about this. I mean, it's important.
It's okay. All right, let's drop the reason. Let's drop the rationale. Let's stop arguing with myself. Deep down in my cockles, what is my gut telling me? I think it's telling me it's D'Angelo Hall.
You're right.
Going once, going twice.
I can't believe it, but I have nothing to say that I haven't already said.
It's D'Angelo Hall. I think it's D'Angelo Hall. I got to go with D'Angelo Hall as the tiebreaker here. I think we crown the D'Angelo Hall 4-interception game as the worst Bears game of our lives. I don't think any of us thought that at the beginning of this tournament.
No.
I think some people might argue with us about it, which is great.
I think that people are going to be. I don't know how mad they're going to be, but I think that we got this one way different from what people are going to expect.
Definitely.
I think we said this is why we were excited about this tournament, because I think from the minute we set the bracket for the worst Bears tournament last year, we kind of knew how it was going to play out.
The only game in the Final Four I thought would be there was the Thanksgiving Day Massacre.
But yeah, this bracket played out just. And I hope people at least respect that we reasoned ourselves to these games through a very unique lens. But yeah, I think I'm crowning D'Angelo Hall. If you want to crown him, crown his ass.
Very close second place. This is one of the few tournaments where I think I will also remember number two and be that almost won for sure.
Yeah, I mean, same old Jay is powerful in its own right. So
this is really the way it had to end. It had to end with two Jay Cutler games. It had to end with two supremely embarrassing Jay performances. Just ball crushing Jay performances. Like, how else were we going to define our relationship with the Bears over our lives so far, if not through Jay Cutler?
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, coming down to two Jay games is fitting. And really, I think, truly a coin flip. Anybody who would have picked the other, I totally understand. And it's funny because enough time and distance has passed that I didn't think that this would necessarily be a Jay Cutler trauma tournament. If anything, for a little while there, it looked like it was maybe going to be a Justin Fields.
You put
trauma.
A lot of fucking Justin Fields games in there.
Yes. We got a lot of nominees, is the thing. Like, that was also reflecting the will of the people, because again, recency bias is strong there too. But I think we reasoned through that. And I do think, I mean, like I said, the last Jay Cutler post that I wrote on the old blog, when I said that Jay Cutler was the most Bears player of them all.
Yep.
He is synonymous with this era of Bears football.
Well, and I mean, if you look at, you know, you say the title of the tournament is Of Our Lives. Realistically speaking, I don't think, I mean, the earliest game on here was 2002. I don't know if I even like distinctly remember a Bears game from before 2000. So like you have the absolute shit era of the early 2000s. You have the Super Bowl year. And then we had Jay for 8-9 years.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we had Mitch Trubisky, which obviously was doomed from the start. And then we had Justin Fields, who didn't end up working out here. So like Jay represents the best we've had it for a very long time.
I mean, it's true.
And it's he's true. The best and most consistent. So like the until something happens, like that's what it's that's we're going to look back. I don't want to say fondly because, you know, but like.
Well, at about the Jay Cutler era, I still think I said that one best when I said, what was it? I said, I still hate everyone who hated Jay Cutler, but I also hate Jay Cutler now. I think that's like everybody dug in. It was miserable of all time. It was a constant war, a constant battle. And you enjoyed none of it at any point.
Well, so. And it stinks both as a fan and I think kind of for Jay that, like, if he was the best quarter, like, if he was just a quarterback we had and it was sort of like a couple years where we were okay, you know, between times where we were good, he'd be remembered as a fine guy. You know, it's in Chicago, the expectations are low, but, like, there's still it's not hope, but, like, You want them to be good so bad, and they never are. And like, if we had an era to look back fondly on, and then be like, and then we had Jay, which was fine. He probably would have been fine. And if after Jay they'd become good, it would have been like, oh, well, you know, Jay wasn't great, but it was better than Rex Grossman. And instead, like, just I have all of these memories, and almost all of them are bad.
I mean,
of
it was
this man that to this day I profess to love. That's my boy.
But he was.
I hate everything I know about him.
He was as good as it got, and it wasn't good enough. Mm-hmm. That's the Bears.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a great way to end it. Our winner of the worst Bears game of our life, the D'Angelo Hall game from 2010, 4 interceptions directly to D'Angelo Hall, whose jersey is apparently now in the fucking Hall of Fame off the back of this game. So yeah, we'll be back next week. Will Eric be here? I don't fucking know. What are we going to do? I don't fucking know. It's going to be wild.
Those two questions are very closely related.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess folks, see
Kyle,
you next week.
Did you start the fan bracket yet? Are we doing a fan bracket?
I figured out finally how to do polls. You just can't have any images or any, so I can't like put the bracket and have the, I have to do the polls under the bracket. So I will put the bracket up there and I will let the fans vote to see how their tournament would have played out.
Very curious to see how wrong we are.
Yeah. I mean, I think a fan vote probably ends up with something like the NFC Championship game or the Chris Conte game versus the double doink. That would be my guess as to how a fan vote would go.
Yeah, I agree. And I think double points is up there.
I think that's a heartbreaking bracket, but it's not the spirit of this tournament as we took it. Which, again, that happened last year, too, with the worst Bears players of our lives. We kind of factored in so many things beyond just absolute value or absolute best worst.
I mean, I had to issue a passionate defense of how dare you say Jay Cutler is one of the worst Bears players of our lifetimes.
That's true.
Because he was the most Bears player of our lifetimes.
Yeah, so we had, whereas the fans last year very much were like, nope, definitely the 2004 Bears QBs and Cody Parkey and all that shit. And it's just like, you know, you're taking this a little too literal there. So
how dare you interpret the words we said to mean what they mean?
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you, Eric, for joining us. It's been Eric intends to also rejoin us in the fall when we are breaking down these here Bears games. So this will not be the last that you hear of Eric, hopefully until next year's tournament. But yeah, Travis and I will resume off-season potting here in a little bit. We've got the training camp not too far away.
Yeah, not that I don't love being here, but my opinion on college football is that it's boring and sucks, so I will not contribute much of value for our dear listeners.
He's got that, yeah.
Eric will fly away.
Right. Delta. Good night, fellas. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I show do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.